There are some things that sometimes generate more heat than light. And there are some areas of life, I think different areas for different communities, for different cultures, for different periods of time, where people get very worked up about stuff, and often things are not thought through clearly. It's true to an extent about Zionism in general, and the Yom HaTzimut sometimes brings it to a head. People sometimes get very caught up on small differentiators, and often it becomes a matter how one celebrates Yom HaTzimut. Sometimes it ends up being more a matter of, you know, are you on this side or that side? Are you this type of person or that type of person? As opposed to thinking things through. And oftentimes it becomes more like a, like, oh, you say halal bracha, you say halal with a bracha, you must be one of those. You say halal bracha, you must be one of those. And you did blow shofar, you didn't blow shofar, you said kirishma, you said kabbal shabbos, you didn't say kabbal shabbos. A lot of times you did shave, you didn't shave, you said tachin, you didn't say tachin, long tachin, short tachin. You keep Yom HaTzimut, hey, or vavi, a lot of times people get very, very, very caught up. Not always, but often irrationally so, on a little detail. Little details are very important. But what's irrational when it becomes more an issue of like, is what team are you on? If you don't do all these things, you're not a Zionist. Or if you do these things, then you're whatever. As opposed to thinking things through. The Rosh Baruch Hu gave us a rich Torah. And there's plenty of richness and nuance in terms of how to respond to various situations. There's plenty of richness and nuance in terms of halacha has plenty to say. When do you say halal, when do you not say halal? And when do we blow shofar and do not blow shofar? And haftarah and so on and so forth. And shaving and this and that. And it would be, I think, kedai to work through all the issues and to understand what it is that we're celebrating. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about what it means to be a Zionist, what it is that we celebrate, and how we should go about celebrating. And maybe we could start by dispelling some inaccuracies. I have to tell you that I have fond memories, very fond memories of Yom HaTzimut, of Tav Shin Nun Gimel, Nun Dalet, 1994. My first year at YU, my first year at Shechter Shir, and Shechter typically gives the Shir on Yom HaTzimut is entirely made in Yom HaTzimut. It was so incredibly refreshing. Up to that point, I'd been under the misimpression that, like, you know, there aren't really, like, real Tanei Chachamim who think Zionism is a good thing. And one sentence gets the misimpression that the vast majority of significant Tanei Chachamim are opposed to this. Yeah, okay, Rav Kook and the Rav, you know, here and there, one or two people. And it's really not the case. So just to dispel a little bit in the way of historical inaccuracy, and then we'll jump into the heart of the matter. In 1938, you can get this out of the wider library. In 1938, the Aguda had one of their Knesios Gedolos. Every number of years they would have an international conference. In 1938 it was in Marienbad. And the war was looming large at that point. It was already, it described it, it opened with Tehillim, with an incredibly tearful Tehillim. People understood that dark days were coming. And one of the issues that was on the table at that point that the Aguda discussed is if they were, the international community was discussing a partition plan. Or maybe we could take the British Mandate of Palestine and divide it into a piece that's going to go to the Jewish state and a piece that will become an Arab state. And one of the big issues of conversation at the Knesia of the Aguda in 38 was if we're offered the partition plan, should we accept it or not? If they, if the powers that be are going to ask the opinion of the Rabban of the Aguda Israel, as far as we know, they do not. But what ought our approach to be? So there were two main camps, and there was a small third camp. The two main camps were to accept it or not to accept it. Ritzirl said, there were those that said, how can you accept it? How can you give away part of Eretz Yisrael? Who gives us the right to give away to accept only part of me? We're okay with the fact we're giving part of Eretz Yisrael away to the Arabs. So Ritzirlson at the time led the group that felt, we're not giving anything away. Right now we have nothing. They're offering us half a loaf. So we should take it. And Rav Nachum Zemba was one of the great goanim of pre-war Poland. He was seen by many as the Rav of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Nachum Zemba gave this very impassioned drush at the Agudah Convention, and he said, you may be right, we don't have anything, they haven't given it to us, we're not giving it away, something we already have practical possession over. He says, it's like asking a mother to give away, you know, to choose between her children. How could, emotionally, how could a Jew say, I'm okay with you know, accepting this notion that part of the straw has to go to someone else? But the Medubra was whether it's okay to have a Jewish state that only encompasses part of Eretz Yisrael, or do we need to push for a Jewish state that's going to encompass all of Eretz Yisrael? There was a small third faction that said, rejected the whole premise and said, how are you talking, how could you have a Jewish state before B'Yisrael Mashiach? That was numerically at the Agudah Convention, that was a very small third faction. However, that faction included Rav Chanan Wasserman, primarily Rav Chanan Wasserman and Rav Aaron Cutler. Rav Aaron Cutler, they did feel that it was like somehow a kfir and a munas HaMashiach to accept a state, a Jewish state before B'ez HaMashiach. But Rav Aaron Cutler survived, came to America, and built an incredibly influential yeshiva. So that was a position. It was not the dominant position. There was a position that we should be inherently opposed to establishment of the state of Israel. But outside of the Hungarian community, the Satmar and Minkach and Papa, who did not even come to that good convention, apparently they understood they would be outvoted, among the Litvish and Polish community, that the notion that we should be fundamentally opposed to a secular state of Israel was very much a minority opinion. Obviously, there was great practical concern in terms of, you know, what would this state look like and what would be the spiritual impact. But the notion that sometimes gets the impression, before the war, now everyone was, all the big Rabbanim, all the, you know, almost all the Tmiachim were against the establishment of the state of Israel. We're just sort of in a corner here. That is, that's just not correct. Yeah.
We were having a discussion over Shabbos about what makes Israel a Jewish state and notion, and the discussion of whether or not we should give away land or whatever. Someone brought up a really good point. What exactly makes Israelites definitively a Jewish state? Not in a halachic sense, but like more in like the Arabs have a higher growth like birth rate. What happens when they take over? And they have a higher population than us. There's not a Jewish government. Where is this notion of is distinctly a Jewish state come from? I happen to believe for sure that it's a Jewish state, but I didn't know whether to respond to that point.
Can someone say it should be like maybe Ghana or something like that?
There was, historically, the British tried to push the idea, which Herzl apparently was open to, of establishing a Jewish state in Uganda. But we believe it says in the Chumash that that's the first Rashi in Chumash. First Rashi in Chumash says that if not the one of the primary functions of Sefer Bereishis is to tell us and tell us clearly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge of the universe. After all, he created the entire universe, so it's up to him to decide who gets what. And the balance of Sefer Bereishis is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a very clear determination that he wants Eretz Yisrael to go to Zera Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. Now she says, Umusol will say to you, Listom Atem, which is something that really only has happened in a practical sense over the last number of decades. So we'll say, we'll know that they may or may not be open to this argument. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Eretz Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Eretz Yisrael, that's permanent. Kadosh Baruch Hu, three times in Jewish history, Kadosh Baruch Hu not only gave us Eretz Yisrael, but gave us political sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. That was true leading up to and during the period of the Bais Rishon, right, from the entry of Yehoshua, where they so slowly spread Jewish sovereignty over Eretz Yisrael. And then, obviously, near the end of the Bais Rishon, when Sancheyev took away most of it, they held on at least to the area around the Eretz Yehuda, the area around Yerushalayim, up until the closer to the Churban Bais. They came back to Bayesheni, to build Bayesheni under Persian auspices with the authorization of Koresh, Cyrus, the emperor of Persia, with his blessings, but as a province of the empire. And then Persia was overtaken by Greece, by Alexander the Great, and the Greek empire that followed in his wake broke down upon his death into three parts. So the Syrian part of what had been the Greek empire retained control over Eretz Israel up until the revolt of the Hashmonaim against Antiochus, and that established the second, what's known by historians, the second Jewish Commonwealth. The second time in history that the Jewish people had a free sovereign government over Eretz Israel. And that continued for a while until that government fell apart, unraveled, and were taken over by the Romans. And then beyond that point was the Churban Bayis Sheni. In 1948, HaKadosh Baruch Hu restored a Jewish government to Eretz Yisrael after a break of more than 2,000 years.
Was it moment to a Jewish government?
Fantastic question. So the truth is, I think the Rav had a nusach. The definition of Zionism is to recognize the state of Israel. Not just that we love Eretz Israel, but to recognize the state of Israel as a matana tova from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We see that the restoration of Jewish sovereignty to Eretz Israel is an incredible, incredible gift. I think I mentioned that Shechter every year shiur on Yom HaTzimut is totally Niyam Diyoma. In different years, different things. Sometimes they'll talk about the seven halachic aspects of Eretz Yisrael, a topic we touched on earlier in the year. Sometimes we'll talk about the practicalities of halachic practicalities of Yom HaTzimut. Tachna, no tachna, hal, shofar, no shofar, and so on and so forth. And to explain why, which we'll get to probably not today, probably tomorrow. One time he gave a shiur where he spoke about 10 reasons, 10 things that we celebrate in Yom HaTzimut. So I want to share some of them with you. Besides the obvious, which sometimes the obvious needs to be restated, besides the obvious, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that a bit of knowledge of mid-20th century history will quickly tell you that the Jewish people were in an incredibly precarious position after World War II. It had been decimated, tertiated in the Holocaust, and most nations were not really interested in having us, certainly not in large numbers. And the establishment, and the British were not allowing us into Israel either. The Americans were allowing us in very limited numbers, the famous boat that was turned back. And the establishment of the Hakamas HaMedina really saved untold Jewish lives. Establishing the Medina restored the Kimitzion, the full strength of Kimitzion Teitz, full strength, to much greater strength, full strength of Kimitzion Teitz Torah, we only have a Sanhedrin in the Beis HaMikdash. But the concept of Kimitzion Teitz Torah, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, the flourishing of Torah in Eretz Yisrael, there was Torah being learned before and also, but the unbelievable explosion of Talmud Torah throughout the world, and particularly in Eretz Yisrael, and so obviously even in physical B'derech HaTeva ways, flowing from Torah Eretz Yisrael is unbelievably remarkable. Now the flourishing of and then there is Simcha over restoration of just the formality restoration. Jewish sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael is itself a halachic notion. Even without a Beis HaMikdash, and it is itself an aspect of Yeshua, of Geula. And Tav was pointed out a number of times that it's a Magen Avram in Shulchan Aruch. The last Simon in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, Simon Tav Kuf Samach Aleph in Aruch Chaim is about the last two Simonim, Tav Kuf Samach, Tav Kuf Samach Aleph, are after we're done with the halachas of Tisha B'Av, but other deen that have to do with Churban that apply all year long. The Tavkuf Samach, Tavkuf Samach is about different things you do throughout the year. It's Zeich L'Churban. Tavkuf Samach Aleph is the halachos of tearing Kriya. The Gemara tells you tear Kriya if you see the Beis HaMikdash B'Churbanah, if you say Yerushalayim B'Churbanah, or if you see Arei Yehuda B'Churbanah. That's the Gemara at the end of Maseches Moed Katan. See, any of those three, you have to tear Kriya. So the question is, so you know what the Mikdash is? The Mikdash B'Churbanah, we don't have Beis HaMikdash. Yerushalayim B'Churbanah means we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. What are Arei Yehuda B'Churbanah? What does it mean that Chevron is in Churban or not in Churban? What does it mean that Beit Lechem is or is not in Churban? So incredibly revealing Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham writes, is the first Sif Katan here in Tavkuf Samach Alf, Sif Alf, the Churbanon, Afa Pishiosh Mem Yisrael. Even if there's a large Jewish community in a city in Eretz Yehuda, Kevin Shah Umos Moshlim Aleihem Mikri Churban. If the non-Jewish government is in charge, the Ottoman Empire is in charge, the British Empire is in charge, the Crusaders are in charge, even if at this point they are, even if they are allowing Jews to live there, even if there's a large Jewish community, that's called Arei Yehuda B'Churbanah. Halacha l'mas, and that's what it means if you see nowadays, the PA does control large chunks of Arei Yehuda. If you see a piece of Beit Lechem, almost all Beit Lechem is under the PA, except for right around Kevin Rachel. Right, the Chevron, a chunk of Chevron under Palestinian control. So if you're on a mountaintop where you can see the part of Chevron that's under Palestinian control, you can see this part, you can see over the wall, you can see the 95 or so percent of Beit Lechem that's under Palestinian control. So you have a Chiyuv to tear Kriya. Well, Chevron is all but it's a practical din, sadly. But Chevron was also pointing out the definition of Churban is a lack of Jewish sovereignty. Are you who that don't have Jewish sovereignty are B'Churban? If they have Jewish sovereignty, then they're not. Then they are, in some sense at least, Geulim. You see, Mamash did in Shulchan Aruch that the Jewish sovereignty itself, independent of restoration of Beis HaMikdash, independent of Bias HaMashiach, is in itself an expression of, a partial expression of Geulah. And then there's more. And then there's also... it's also perhaps an expression of an unfolding process of towards complete geula. That's the halacha concept of aschalta de geula, in steps, the early steps that lead to complete geula. Complete geula is Malach HaMashiach and rebuilding it based on Mitzvah HaKavos HaKarbanos and full kibbutz galus. But we have been watching kibbutz galus remarkably for the last century or more, and it's not just that. It's a pasuk. It's an orachayim in Parshas Balak, and a pair of gemaras, both of which appear on the same amud in Shas and Hedrin Sadiches amud Alf. Because v'shem atomar, what does that have to do with it? Aschalta de geula. Geula can come through political means. Geula means, you know, Mashiach comes flying out of the sky in China. Yeah, political development. It may have been helpful. Right? It may have been helpful. But I can say this is a step towards Geulah Shleimu. How you talking? So there's the last Nevuah of Bilam is when Balak already wants to fire him. And Bilam tells Balak, Balak says, Brach lecha l'mekamecha, run back. You can run back with your tail between your legs, back to where you come from. I'm not paying a cent. You totally did the opposite of what I hired you to do. You're blessed with people. I'm not interested. So Bilam Tron says, look, I told your malachim initially, I'm going to say what Kadosh Baruch Hu wants me to say. I'm sorry you don't like it. And then he says, I am going to leave. Ha'ini holeich la'mi, perik chavdala pasik yudalad. But he says, I have to tell you first, I have to tell you what Achriz Yom is going to look like. What's going to be like in the end of days? And what's the first thing that he says? Erenu v'lo ata ashurim v'lo karov. I see it, b'yos HaMashiach, but not right now. I see in the distance, it's not nearby. Dorach kochav miyakov, become shevet miyisrael. I see a kochav, a shooting star, and a rising staff. Dorach kochav, become shevet. So the Archaim wants, and the Archaim lived in the 1700s. Archaim wants to know Archai wants to know what's the meaning, what's the significance of these two metaphors? Of a darach kochav and a kam shaven, of a shooting star or comet and a rising step. These are poetic ways of expressing what ideas. So he says, well, the answer lies in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. According to Sanhedrin, that Sadi Chesav and Aleph, the second half of the Amid, the way the lines get wide, the Gemara says, points out that there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, in Yishayahu. I believe it's the last pasuk in the Haftarah of Kisavo. That in the last two words is a stira. Pasuk is talking about the whole part of Yishayahu is talking about Kiyas HaMashiach and Geula. And the pasuk ends, Rabbi Hashem says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to bring Mashiach, Be'ita Achishan. I'm going to, on time, hurry it up. Now, can't be the one. You can hurry it up, it can be on time. But how do you hurry up and be on time? I mean, if you're late, you hurry up so you can be on time. But that's obviously not what the pasuk means. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu bringing Bias and Mashiach in advance or on time? So the Gemara says the answer is not Tzvedinim, but there are two options. Either or. Either Be'ita or Achishan. The Gemara says that there's another stira. Another stira is between Zechariah and Daniel. Not about when, but about how. Daniel describes Mishbias HaMashiach being entirely miraculous. Va'aromin Shemayah, Imanani Shemayah Kivar Inish Asaf, flying out of the clouds, flying in the sky. And Zechariah describes Mashiach as Ani Baruch HaLachamar, riding a donkey, poor man riding a donkey, you know, someone showing up and beating up Chevy, like nothing exciting. So the Gemara says, which one is it? Is Bias Mashiach going to be razzle-dazzle or very simple? Is Bias Mashiach going to be on time or ahead of schedule? The Gemara answers both questions by saying, well, it's up to us. There's plan A and plan B. Zachel ifra zocha. So then Mashiach will come ahead of schedule and Mashiach will come in an entirely miraculous fashion. Lo zachel, if we're not zocha, if we don't earn it, then Mashiach will come on time, be'ita, and it'll be on v'rocha v'chamon. Number one, that's the source for the idea of the kates. So there's a time by which Mashiach has to come. That's the part that's the algorithm saying the Pasuk in Yishayahu. There's a time, Be'ita, the time by which Mashiach is going to come, whether we deserve it or not. Lo zachu, if we don't do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring Mashiach by time X. We don't know what that time is. But there is an ace, Be'ita. If we earn our Be'ez Mashiach, so he could come sooner, as soon as we earn it. Sounds like he could come. We don't earn it, but whether we earn it or not, sooner HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to bring Mashiach despite us. So even if we don't earn it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring Mashiach by whatever that time, that kates, Be'ita. And the Gemara says it's not just a question of when, it's also a question if we're Zoche, then Mashiach will be Tharom and Anane Shemayah. If not, Ani Baruch HaLachamor. So the Arachayim writes, here if you want to look it up, definitely worth looking within. It's very beautiful and very important, Arachayim. By Midbar Perek Chav Dalet Pasuk Yud Zayin. He says that's what's going on with these two descriptions. He works it through the psukim here, but let's focus on what he says about the two descriptions. He says, if we're zocha, if it's ben tzal zuchus Yisrael, that Mashiach comes because we deserved it, we did something to deserve it. So that's Darach Kochav, a shooting star, Yizrach HaGol Min HaShamayim. It's going to be a Neis Nifla. Okay. If not, the Gula of Be'ita, if we're not Zocha, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashiach, because that's the plan regardless, so then, become a Shevet in Yisrael. What does that mean? He says, Shevet is a reference to political development. Kederach hakamim ba'olam, derach hateva. And that's the Ani Baruch HaVal Chamar. It will be a natural political development. So either Mashiach could come, the manner of Bias Mashiach could be entirely miraculous, or the manner of Bias Mashiach could be, the end result will be the same, but the process to get there will be an unfolding of a natural political process. The notion of different routes to get to the same ultimate geula is something you find elsewhere. You find it with the Jewish people in Midbar. Either way, we're going to get to Eretz Yisrael, but is it going to be, you know, the quick way, or is it going to be 40 years in Midbar? But either way, we're going to get to the same end result. The truth is, even the entire universe is like that. The notion that you find in Midrashim that had Adam and Chava held out till the end of the day, they were gone, that would be the end of Olam Hazeh. They would have passed in Nisayon, gone straight to Olam Haba. We will ultimately get to Olam Haba, but now it's a far more circuitous, complex, painful route. So that's what the Aruch Chaim points. That's what the Gemara is saying. There are two ways that we could get to the end result of Mamisha, a Basar V'dam, living descendant of David and Shlomo, king over the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, rebuilding the base of nation, so on and so forth. The same end result. But how do we get there? Do we get there through rapid, ahead of schedule, an entirely miraculous fashion? Or do we get there? We'll get there when we get there, through a slow, unfolding, natural process of political development. So you read that. It's much. You look at the last century of history with newly opened eyes. And it is a little bittersweet. Because on the one hand, it means what we're seeing looks an awful lot like this, the Kam Shevet. So on the one hand, it's a little bit sad, because it means Lo Zachinu. It means we're getting version 2. But on the other hand, but we have the schus of seeing Geula unfold before eyes. No, to see Nebuas. You think about, and not only that, I'll take you back up to the top of Tzadichas Hamelach. I may have mentioned this earlier. Kedai to see it. Kedai to over the next 24 hours. To open up, and that's how I'm trying to give you a precise Maram Kamos. To open up and look within. The Gemara is talking about, how do you know when Mashiach is coming? This Be'ita. When is the case? When is Mashiach coming? The Gemara, the Tanam say it's very dangerous. People try to calculate and use Ramazim and Daniel and here and there and try. Tipach Hasmashtayim Shalom B'chash V'kitzim. Tanam, the Chazal were very, very opposed. Even though many fine Jews have done it. It's a curious phenomenon. But the Chazal very clear. We vigorously discourage trying to calculate when the Kates is, the number, the date. But, the Gemara says, if you want a simon that Mashiach is on his way, Amar Rabbi Abba, top of Tzadiches Amrav, like 8-10 lines off the top. Ein lucha Kates Megum is that there is no clearer simon that Mashiach is on the way than the following. Sheneh Amar Pasuk in Yecheskel, Atem Hare Yisrael, you mountains of Israel, says the Navi. Anfechem titnu, ufrichem tiso la'ami Yisrael. Now it's time. The Navi describes that Rosh Hashanah is going to say when Geula is coming, Rosh Hashanah is going to say to the mountains, now it's time, say to the trees, now it's time to become green, now it's time to give fruit, your children are coming back, now it's time to, everything you've been holding back on for all these centuries, now it's time for Yisrael to become green again. And the Gemara says, there is no better simon of the unfolding of Geula than that. So it's a Gemara. And what? Right, Rabbi Gold. Yeah, it's unbelievable. You look at all the descriptions. I think I may have mentioned it earlier. You look at the description of the Crusaders. You look at the descriptions of Mark Twain. They talk about it. They thought Eretz Zavos Chol Dvash should come to Eretz Yisrael, could be like incredibly verdant and fertile, and the Crusaders were like shocked. Like, this is a promised land? Like, arid, dusty, desert. And Mark Twain comes centuries later. Like, what is this? And all of a sudden, Klal Yisrael comes back to Eretz Yisrael, and the land that was waiting for children to come back. They came back, and all of a sudden, she starts to release her fruit again. And within a couple of decades, again, not Nes Nigla, but an extraordinary Nes Nistar. And as the Rambam writes in several places, when Nes Nistar was predicted in advance. That's the Nevuah, and that's the Gemara. And now you see it. And then, you know, you think about, we'll close with this for now, we'll pick up tomorrow, the image of the Gemara of Makkos. Rabbi Akiva sees Mamash, he sees Churban, he says, oh, I see the Churban Mamash the way that the Navi describes it, so that gives me added ability to already imagine in my head the way that the happy Nevuahs are going to come true. We're seeing those happy Nevuahs coming true. We haven't even discussed yet the concept of the pride of the Jewish pride and the pride of the Jewish religion. It's the Gemara and Chagiga. It will open with that tomorrow. It will open with that. And then after we sort of develop more fully what it is that we're celebrating, and we could talk about how we go about celebrating.